Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect to the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kaelea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hi, beautiful friends. Welcome. Welcome back if you're returning, and welcome if you're new. I hope that you are faring well in the midst of this really beautiful springtime. We finally have almost all of our leaves are out on the trees. It's a very exciting time here. Really feeling that verdant energy of springtime. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this interview with you today. It's actually with a dear heart sister friend of mine, Allison Avalon, who I have known for a long time. We actually lived in community together in the same general community when I lived in Northern California, and we haven't been super in touch since then, but hearing her story and really learning a little bit about what she's doing these days got me super excited to actually share her story on the podcast, because actually, a huge piece of what happened for her is that she had had chronic jaw and chronic pelvis tightness. So she had extreme menstrual cramps. She was having ovarian cysts. She also had such a chronically tight and tense jaw that she would also chew her cheeks. Like she would actually chew her cheeks out of a place of, it might have been anxiety, it might have been just tension, it might have been fear in some way. She talks about this. But the jaw and the pelvis have a very profound relationship. We've probably talked about that at some point before on the podcast, but if we haven't and it's news to you, then just to know that this is something that actually is known within like the bodywork world. Lindsay Corsell, who I actually haven't podcast from last summer, we talked about myofascial work for the breasts and chest and the pelvis, but she actually also does myofascial work for the jaw. And when our jaws are tight, it is very common. It is not always, but it is very common that our pelvises are also tight. And so this whole concept that Allison had experienced this intense sensation in her body and really like a holding in her body for years and years, for decades, that she feels like was actually generational, that her family, this is something that has been passed down to her, that she now does not experience those things at all, is very powerful. And she talks about how she found her way to really releasing. Really, that's what it is, right? When we're tense, we are holding. And really, a lot of the time to actually relax, we need to release. We need to feel safe. We need to feel at ease. We need to feel calm, soft, receptive, like all of the places that we go when we actually feel like we're okay. And that's not, it's easier said than done, right? And so Allison is going to share about her personal experience and how that related both to starting to do silent meditation for herself and also through her multiple decades of entheogen experience and practice, but really culminating in a place where she actually found a particular entheogen that she's going to talk about that she considers to be something called death practice. And we talk about what death practice is. We talk about how this relates to her pelvis and her womb space and how everything has changed for her, how her creative self, how her just the flow of energy in her life has been opened up. And we don't just talk about her own personal experience. We also talk about how she is now hosting and holding retreat spaces where she combines these different modalities. She also brings sound healing in and movement and dance. And so she's really very integrative in her approach, but she is now offering this kind of space for people in different places. And she does have one retreat coming up. It's like this week. So it's unlikely that you're going to be able to get there, but it's in Mexico this week. And you can certainly go to the show notes to find the link to that. And then she's got another one coming up in France in September. So that might be something that you could get yourself to if you were interested, if you listen to this and you feel a peak of curiosity. So the show notes will be at herbalwomb.com/episode122, herbalwomb.com/episode122, if you do want to go and grab any of those links and find out more. I just wanted to mention that here because this is an episode that is full of so much wisdom, and she doesn't talk about the retreat until the end. So I just wanted to make sure that you know about it just in case that's something that you really want to look into. But before we dive into the actual interview, I want to do the disclaimer that nothing that we share today is medical advice, of course. I am an herbalist, I'm an integrative health coach and practitioner, and Allison is a facilitator of retreats, and she is a singer, and she's a writer, and she is a meditation practitioner, and she is a teacher. But neither of us are your individual practitioners, so everything that you learn or hear today is off your own information and education, for your own personal empowerment, for you to look into more deeply if you feel resonant with certain things, and feel into your own body and your own womb space to feel what's true and right for you, because your own body and your own womb space always know best. And second disclaimer, there are some gendered pronouns, not many, but some gendered pronouns used in the episode, words like women may be used. This is absolutely appropriate for honestly anyone. She does retreats for all genders, and so this is definitely something that's appropriate for anyone who is curious, is kind of curious about how entheogens may be supportive in your healing practice, in your journey, and or silent meditation, and or just reflective practice. So with no further ado, here's the interview. Welcome, Allison. Grateful that we're doing this, partly because I've known you for a long time now, and you're just a dear person in my heart. So to bring people onto my podcast and into this space that I care about a lot is really special. And I just love seeing how you've been growing and what you've been starting to offer in the world. And so getting to highlight that also feels like a gift.
Thank you. You're right. Yeah, it's such an honor both to be your friend and to be your ally on this path of sharing our gifts and stepping up into the world. So thanks for having me today. I really enjoy what you're doing. I respect what you're doing, and I'm excited to be here today.
So let's just get started with you introducing yourself, whatever you'd like to share about like what your background is and what the work you're doing now is and why you feel like you do what you do.
Sure. So I'm Allison Avalon, and I have always been a bit of a wild child. I've always been on a quest for truth, trying to understand the nature of the universe, how it worked, why it worked, what is this life, what is death? And so I've been a very curious child, and that led me to a background actually in studying ethnoecology. So my fascination was with the intersection between people and culture and their use and their interaction with the natural environment. And especially my focus was in ethnoecology and ethnobotany, looking at the way that humans interacted with plants in the natural environment. And then even more specifically in entheoecology, which is the way humans will utilize entheogenic or sacramental or psychedelic plants in order to cultivate a deeper relationship with the natural world. So I created a degree in this, a science degree, and then a master's degree in sustainable systems of how do humans create sustainable systems utilizing their relationship to the plants in the natural world to create a more healthy and aligned culture. And my why was always trying to create a more sustainable culture, one where we respected ourselves, our bodies, each other, and the planet, the Earth. And so my driving why was how do we create a culture where we care, where we really care about our impact on the environment, which led me to be a permaculture designer and then a farmer and farm consultant. And as much as I loved being a farmer and a gardener and working with plants, I realized that what I really was being called to, and I didn't realize it, and it took me a while to find my way there, was to tend the inner landscape. So now I help people to tend the inner landscape through meditation, through breath work, through entheogenic plant medicines, through inquiry and death practice, so that we can find that healthy relationship. And when I found my healthy relationship and not just focused on being a martyr, just focused on being an activist, my joy and what really helps me feel alive and feel that connection to life is to sing and to write. So I'm a singer, I'm a musician, I'm an author, but ultimately I'm in service to helping both myself and the people that I encounter create a healthier relationship with life and death.
Wow. Okay. First of all, quite a background, just like academically and then also personally. Yeah, I'm curious, actually, like you just spoke that and kind of not glossed over, but it was just spoken with no context, like death practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you just speak a little to that?
Yeah. So ever since I was a child, I had dreams where very, very vivid dreams, like as vivid as real life, sometimes even more vivid than real life, where I died. I sometimes was old, young, male, female. I was different genders, different races, and I died in all sorts of different ways. And then I would wake up as a suburban American woman and trying to figure out, or girl, and trying to figure out how to exist in modern world. And it didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand it. I also have a very strange and beautiful ability to sometimes be able to communicate with beings who have already passed. So many times relatives who have passed will come to say hello or to pass messages on to the family. And sometimes beings who have been dead for many, many like generations have come to talk with me and to teach me things. And so I've been curious about death. And I've noticed that in our culture, we are obsessed with youth. We are obsessed with immortality. We want to look younger for as long as possible. We push death away into nursing homes. We don't see people getting old and dying anymore. We've lost that part of sustainable culture where the young people spend time with the elderly. We've sectioned everyone off where children are in preschools and everyone's just with their own generation. And then the elderly are pushed. And so I'm a hospice certified caregiver, meaning that I sit with people at their deathbed and support them in their path of dying. And what I noticed was that there were patterns of people's regrets, of their fears, of their trust, their faith, the things that they wish they had done more of, the things that they wish they hadn't done. And I noticed how much knowing this information really helped me live more fully in my life. I was so much more present when I had that beautiful gift and the privilege of getting to sit beside people who were dying. And also in my meditation practice, a lot of the Tibetan Book of the Living and Dying, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, there's actually many cultures who embrace death as part of a healthy life. And so part of my work is to help people embrace this and to create a healthy relationship with their own mortality so that they can stop living in fear and truly live in their life. And so I do this with breath work. I do this with long periods of time in nature, silent, long periods of silent meditation for reflection, and then also using entheogenic plant medicines to invoke an embodied experience or practice of dying so that we can practice what it feels like to let go of everything that we know and everything that we think we are to experience us beyond the mortal coil, so to speak.
Mm. Gosh, that's powerful freaking work. Seriously.
Yeah.
To be bringing people to face their death and to feel their life.
Yeah, it was an interesting one that I didn't mean to. It wasn't my like mission in life, but I noticed my own relationship with death seemed rather unique. And then I went through several periods of my life of struggling with severe depression and even suicidal ideation. And the scientist in me was like, okay, what's going on? This is a warning, you know, red alert in the system. How do I get back to the root of feeling fulfilled and satisfied and connected to life, waking up, feeling joyful and grateful and excited? And so I took myself on as my own guinea pig to figure out what had happened. How did I get to this place of wanting to plan my exit? And my journey from suicidal ideation to suffering and into satisfaction, into this divine, like sublime connection with the divine, I realized that the gift I received upon that journey and the grace that touched my heart, really, there wasn't really anything left to do but to help other people on that path, because so many people are suffering. The suicide rates are extremely high these days. Anxiety rates are through the roof. And I offer myself and my journey to potentially help others on their journey of reclaiming their relationship with their life.
Mm. I mean, there's so many paths too, to find purpose, to find connection, to find, and I feel like just hearing, I'm excited to go deeper into your story, but just hearing your story and then also I think just even hearing stories, right? Like hearing other people's stories, learning about the different possibilities that are out there, feeling the hope that, oh, there is a way that I can find my way into life again, into wanting to be here.
Yeah. I really loved how you used the word a as well, a way, because sometimes people get on the soapbox once they find a path. They're like, this is the way, this is the path. And each of us has our own unique journey. And so I offer a path that served me and has served many, but it is only a path and there are many, many paths in. So I really appreciated you making that subtle distinction because a lot of times people get confused in that.
Yeah, it's so interesting because actually having this podcast, and I think listeners will probably relate to this, it's like I bring on all these different kinds of practitioners who are doing in some ways similar work. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about how this relates to your womb space and your pelvis and your throat and all of these kind of mixed places. Like we're all kind of doing similar, you know, overlapping parallel work in slightly different ways. And in my mind, actually integrating many of them can be most helpful for most people. I mean, there's some people who it's just one path is great. That's all they need. They're all good. But then there's a lot of people who it's like, oh, you know, even like what you're mentioning that you offer, that there's the piece of being in nature and silent meditation and entheogenic practice and facing different parts of ourselves. You know, there's so much there. It's not just one thing, you know,
it's like, not one thing
only. So one thing that is interesting to me in just hearing you speak to this path of death practice is that it reminds me in a lot of ways of the wisdom of our womb space, because as cycling beings, we are literally every month, those of us who are still cycling when we're in our fertility years, every month we're moving through the process of kind of like an inner release and death, and then building back up that life force and then heading back to death again. So those of like women and folks with wombs, like we have like that deep inner wisdom inside us that we're embodying regularly. I think in my mind, it connects us so much to the cycles of life and death. And if we tune into that, there's so much wisdom there. There's so much we already have that most of us don't even notice.
I know sometimes it's the simplest things, right? Observing those patterns in nature, and we are part of nature. We are organisms in nature. And you're right. Each month there's a death of the possibility. There's a death of this vessel being and bringing in new life. So there's, each month, such a death and rebirth.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, to think about the different phases of our lives, because I mean, I believe you're still in your cycling years, but you know, I'm still in my cycling years, and knowing that menopause will happen and there will be just this kind of completion of this time.
I am facing the very kind of the first hints now of perimenopause, and it's been a humbling and fascinating and mysterious journey of facing the beginning of the end of my fertility phase and moving into menopause. It's been a fascinating journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that it's, you know, it's different for every person what that is, but I think there's a lot of us, and I don't know if this is something you relate to or not, but there are a lot of us who don't have actual biological children. And there is, like, for me, I mean, there's emotion and some grieving there around. It's not like I'm sitting here and being like, I want to have a biological child, because that isn't feeling like what's true for me. But there is this space of like grieving the loss of that, even that possibility, or even that like evolutionary part of myself.
I feel you. I feel you on that. You're right there. That is one of the things I am facing, is the grief of the death of me as mother, a biological mother. And what's fascinating is to really get to notice the subtle distinction between the grief and noticing that there's no regret there. Like there's grief in the death of that possibility. But each month I've consciously chosen not to. And now as I face those final opportunities, even though the grief is there, there is no regret. I trust my choice. I trust that it doesn't feel like my calling. I feel like I can be my desire. My heart wants to be of service to many. And I feel like I can do that better by allowing my womb and my being to be a creative vessel of other things. And so, but it is still a death, and there is some grief that's there, and it's powerful and it's profound.
Yeah, I think that's important to acknowledge and something that a whole lot of us don't really talk about, at least not openly. And a lot of us are starting to face it now, you know, as we're getting older. It's like, oh, even though, like you're saying, similarly, I feel similarly. And I think that's really a piece to acknowledge is that there isn't the regret and that there's still, even without that, we can still grieve. Like we can still feel a lot of emotion. And it's a healthy experience to feel and to release that emotion. And yeah.
Right. Shedding the emotion like we have shed our womb lining.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We need that. Like we are that. So,
yeah.
So thank you for diving into that with me. I really appreciate just what it means to be a human with a womb, you know, like what it actually means and how connected that really is to the cycles of life and death over and over again. And then even in our phases, I think it's just, it's real stuff.
It's real stuff. And what's fascinating is you touched on it, that it's not really a topic that's often spoken about. Like there's so much around being a woman now. I mean, there's been so much change in culture, and yet the process of menopause is still surprisingly relatively silent. And what I do appreciate, though, is that our generation seems to be giving a voice to this. There's not as much shame or all the different emotions that come with that silence or and not having space held for it. But I believe that the men of our generation are able to hold it, and the women of our generation are speaking about it. And it's been a beautiful thing to witness that. And yeah, it gives me hope in our culture as we're able to name and voice these more subtle or unspoken realms of aging and maturation and all those aspects of being alive.
Yeah, it is true. I do feel like our generation, and maybe just like slightly older, like just did a integrative women's health coaching practitioner program last year, and a program that was actually with a lot of people who are pelvic floor physical therapists, and which is really interesting and amazing. But there were actually a lot of people who are kind of like in their transitional time. They're sort of in their perimenopause, menopause time, and they're kind of reflecting on their career and wanting to shift and wanting to be like less of a kind of cog in the medical wheel and be a little bit more deeply connecting with their clients and their patients. And so looking at this program, but it's really interesting because I see how many of them are in that transitional time and all of that reflection is happening. And it's like they're birthing a new version of themselves at this time. And then also they are some of the people right now who are like there and beyond and who are starting to voice this. So I see it's kind of like, yeah, it is our generation. And it's like a few people who are like a little bit ahead of us who are just like, we have to freaking share about this.
Yeah, anyway, you're right. I think to correct my, you know, be a little bit more accurate with my speech, I guess I mean in these times, right? In this time and culture and these women who are going through this changes now, it seems to be receiving more of a voice, which it gives me hope for us being able to face death as well. So I think that's one of the biggest things that has kept this topic being off the table is that most women, they want to stay relevant, you know, in so many careers. Once, you know, you get, and first there's like, if you become a mother, then you tend to drop out of the workforce. But then once you get past, you go into crone, then there's like, still there's this lack of relevance that has been, and I think many of us don't want to be included in that. And so there's been sort of like a resistance to sharing that. And so as we face this, we create a healthy relationship with death by facing this aging process, facing the changes in our body, the changes in our face, and embracing and accepting it as a natural and healthy cycle of life.
And it's so, you know, it's like we can have the intention to do that and the feeling of like, yes, I want to embrace this. And still, it's the same thing as what we were talking about before, that sense of like, there can still be grief. There can still be emotion around it. Yeah. It doesn't have to be like, ooh, and I'm so empowered and I have no emotion around this. You know, it can be both and. And yeah. I appreciate that so much. So let's actually shift gears slightly and just talk a little bit more deeply about your particular story and like your kind of healing path to get to where you are now. Cause I know that you're in a place that seems, well, I don't know, but from what I've heard from you, it seems like you're in a place where there's been an incredible amount of just liberation and shifting and opening in your creative being, in your sense of what you can offer the world, your gifts that you're offering to the world. And there's been kind of a path for you to get there.
There has been quite a path to get there. Yes.
So I'm excited to hear about that. But before we kind of dive into that, can we start by just talking about what you think of as the connection between the throat and the pelvis?
Yes. Yeah, I would love to talk about that. So there's a philosophy that I have been kind of diving into, this connection between the throat and the pelvis. I sort of stumbled across it while I was diving into yoga and meditation and Chinese medicine and like channels and chakras and blocks and things like this. And also, I came to it because I inherited a habit, you would say, of clenching my jaw, grinding my teeth. And it's been going on for generations. And so while I was in utero, I know my mother was doing that a lot. And then I learned that habit as well. And there was so much tension in the jaw that I would even chew the insides of my cheeks until they became raw. It was a habit that I couldn't quit. And I tried. And it was so difficult because it was almost easier to do it than even going to the store and buying tobacco or alcohol or many of the common addictions. There was this strange addiction and compulsion to chewing on the insides of my cheeks. And so I was desperate. I was desperate for relief of like, why did I have this tension, this tense energy moving through my body that was expressing itself as self-harming? I mean, I was harming myself. And so I dove deep to try to understand why this was happening and how to solve it. Because dentists, they're just going to give me a mouth guard just so I'd stop grinding, but nobody could really help me figure it out. Some people said, oh, you should meditate, that'll help. But it just seemed like such a theoretical, vague thing. And so what I came across is this feeling inside myself of noticing that I was so locked up in my jaw. It was like there was this gate that was locked shut and absolutely tight. Nothing was going to get through there. And there's this idea of when we bring awareness to the chakras or to the energy centers that they can like open and spin more freely. And so there's this concept of like blocked energy centers or blocked chakras. And so then I realized that the two main ones, like the main ways that we interact with the world, are through our mouth and our throat and through our anus and through our hips, our pelvis and our womb space. So there's the anus and there's the throat and more generally the pelvis. And a lot of times I've noticed when people live with a lot of fear in their lives, there tends to be a strong chronic contraction in the pelvis and in the throat or in the jaw. And so I call these the master gates. And I believe there are some references in different Eastern philosophies, but it's sort of been my own exploration into these gates and calling them my master gates and working on how do I feel safe enough in my body to open these master gates. And when I focused on my jaw and learned how to relax and soften my jaw, I noticed that at the same time, my hips started to relax, my pelvis started to relax, my anus started to relax, and my womb started to relax. And so where I had used to have ovarian cysts and I would have very, very painful menstrual cycles, extremely intense cramping that would cause me to miss work sometimes and to not be able to do normal activities, when I relaxed the jaw, the hips and the pelvis got the message and suddenly my menstrual cramps went away. And I didn't even realize there was such a connection until I felt it for myself. And then I got really fascinated. And so I am working on a body of work on unlocking the master gates, because if we want to allow the natural chi, the energy force running through the whole universe, to run freely through us, we must return to this place of safety and ease where we're not clamping up and clenching in our pelvises and our hips and our womb space and in our jaw. And it's been absolutely incredible what I have discovered on this journey of relaxing my master gates, allowing the energy to move through me, the health, the vitality, the creativity able to channel through me has changed my life completely. And so it's really incredible. The link between the jaw and the throat, our ability to express ourselves, our voice, to sing or to speak with clarity, is surprisingly linked to the health in our wombs and our pelvis and our anus and that whole area of holding, where we often hold a lot of shit, if I can say that.
You can. It's so true. Yeah. And it's interesting because how it can show up differently for different people. This is something that actually is like fairly known in the PT world too, physical therapy world too, and just kind of different body work practices as well. And something that a friend of mine, Lindsay Corsell, who does myofascial work, she does both pelvic, internal pelvic and external pelvic myofascial work. And then she also works on the jaw and the neck and the head and really sees the connection there too. So there's mm-hmm. so many ways that this shows up and I've heard before. And I think it's really interesting to think about how it can show up differently for different people, where yeah. it could be that somebody is experiencing like a lot of constipation. So it really may right. come in the form of that. Or it could be, like you're saying, it could be intense menstrual cramps. It could be yeah. an irritated bladder. It could be actual like pain with sex. Like there's so many ways that it can show up. It doesn't, right. it's not only one form.
Right. There's so. Not one form. Right. But chronic tension in that area can mm-hmm. then lead to dysfunction in those areas, right? And mm-hmm. the bladder is linked to fear. And there's like a fundamental energetic connection between the bladder and fear. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I feel like it's fear and trauma that have happened that causes us to contract and to clench. It's mm-hmm. almost like we're bracing ourselves against life, or we're, pardon me for using this word again, but holding the oh shit handle, you know, in the car, mm-hmm. that handle that you grab when like you're going too fast around a corner, someone's driving and you feel afraid. So you grab this oh shit handle, and we do that inside our own bodies. We clench and we grip down, almost trying to endure or embrace ourselves against the mystery of life and what's going to come next. Right? Ultimately, that fear of death is what it all comes down to. And when we can return to safety within our bodies, instead of waiting for everything to be perfect in order to feel safe, but to cultivate safety within ourselves, then we can relax those muscles and soften a lot of those, what you're talking about, that different, the constipate, a lot of those chronic illnesses that we struggle to cure in Western medicine can often be worked through energetic and somatic sense of safety and clearing and alignment.
Mm-hmm. It's so, so true. I feel like it's so interesting too, because even separate from just tight tissues, mm-hmm. I also see, as I've been getting deeper and deeper into hormonal health and sexual health and all of these pieces, but especially hormonal health, I actually have like 5 different pillars that I work on. But what I see a lot of it come back to is the nervous system. So mm-hmm. it's so interesting, because it is like you're saying, yes, there's like this tightness in this way that we can hold in these places. And in some people, you know, you have generations, you were saying, you have a generational patterning mm-hmm. that came through as this tight, you know, the TMJ or like the tight jaw experience. And I think, and clenching, all of us can have different pieces like that, but also throughout our lifetime, you know, in this body, we've probably had different experiences of trauma or different experiences yeah. that have been valid, where we right. had to protect ourselves.
We had to protect, right. Right. We, like an acute or a chronic situation caused nervous system dysregulation. And then our response is often to clench and to shut down to protect. Mm-hmm. And then even when the trauma has passed, we aren't able to shake that off and to come back into nervous system regulation, right? We stay in that activated state. And then that's, you know, we end up with all sorts of chronic issues. So I think you're very right there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's just amazing to me. Like, I think just all of the interrelationship that mm-hmm. our bodies are holding, like the constant, it's just so much dynamic interplay is constantly happening. Mm-hmm. I'm in awe of our bodies. Just as I'm in awe of nature, just as I'm in awe of like spirit and connection, it's just it all is the same thing. And there really is just like this constant interplay. All of this to say that you had really intense, in a lot of ways, seemingly like it was showing up in you in a really intense way. You had menstrual yeah. cramps, you had really massive like clenching jaw experience, yeah. you were having anxiety, you had ovarian cysts, you had a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then yeah. what path did you take to support yourself? Like what happened?
I went through on a very, very winding path of trying to understand it. I started using entheogens or psychedelics. The word entheogen, actually, it means to generate the awareness of the divine within. So entheogen, it's in Latin, it's to generate the divine within. Now, of course, like we're always connected, whether we are aware of it or not. And so entheogen has sort of been a rebrand of the name psychedelic, because psychedelic means to wander in the mind. And it's gotten sort of a stigma of just being a drug or just something we do to escape. Whereas entheogen comes with the context of we're taking a plant or an animal or a fungal sacrament or substance in order to connect with ourselves and to connect with life and to utilize it as medicine. And so when I say entheogen, I kind of stumbled upon that before the word was even created when I was a teenager. I started working with psilocybin. I had the beautiful opportunity of meeting Terrence McKenna when I was 17. And I explored with many different entheogens and received a lot of relief, but still couldn't quite land how to show up and fully be me in a society that couldn't find my place. I noticed I was very devoted to truth, and really truth and safety really went hand in hand for me. And I couldn't quite find my place. And so I went on a journey of in school, like I almost went into pre-med and all these different directions. And ultimately it led me to studying the natural environment because that felt safe there. When I was in nature and understand like nature was my safe place. And I didn't quite understand human culture and just all of the intricacies of how we distort and shift truth. And so I went deep into plants and ecology and how to create sustainable systems. And I found some refuge there, but I realized what I was doing was I was trying to make it, I was trying to like greenscape my environment so that I felt better on the inside. So when I started studying permaculture, I went and lived off grid. So I went and like kind of like walked away from mainstream society, and I lived completely off grid for several years, growing my own food, building structures out of natural materials, living completely on renewable local energy sources, collecting water from a spring, and teaching people how to do this. And so that was sort of like my solution, was to recreate something that felt a lot more holistic and beautiful. And that's where it brought me to permaculture and even creating a master's degree in permaculture design and eco-village design. But ultimately, there is this place where I realized that I was still doing the same thing. I was doing a lot of that because I had a fear of civilization or ecological collapse. And I was trying to prepare myself or to learn everything I could. I was trying to create these solutions out of fear. So in a way, I often felt depleted. I was working really, really hard with my hands and laboring in the earth. And it was beautiful, but I was also exhausted. What happened one day was I was noticing in my permaculture studies, they talk about the concept of zone zero. And zone zero is referred to as the area just around the house in like a kind of an ecosystem or in sort of like a homestead permaculture system. It's the area just around the house that you would tend to first before taking your energy too far out into your landscape, because then your energy is going to get diluted. So you want to really land your zone zero before you move out into the landscape. And I suddenly realized, wait a minute, I don't think zone zero is the area right around the house. I think the area, the true zone zero is inside, is within us, inside, not, and I mean the house, I'm like now taking the metaphor and bringing it into the internal landscape and realizing that in my life, if I'm going to try, here I am trying to like align with fulfillment, and I'm trying to create beautiful landscapes for people and inspire sustainability and a care for the earth. But ultimately, I was not tending to my own heart and my own dream. I was, in a way, sacrificing my own self to try to help. And that wasn't really working. And so I noticed that zone zero truly is on the inside. And so I shifted then, and I let go of farming and permaculture and horticulture to focus more on meditation and mindfulness and really utilizing entheogens to tap in and clear pathways for my own truth to emerge, and to not try to find my niche in the world, but to create, to really align with who I was so that my niche could reveal itself. And that's when things started to get really interesting.
Very curious to hear about how they got interesting. And I, something that you probably don't know about me, because I don't know if I would have ever shared it, and certainly haven't shared it on the podcast, is that I also started in permaculture world, and I also did my thesis in college on eco-villages. So I feel like we really come from a very similar place. And I've lived in and out of eco-villages and intentional communities for a few years in my early 20s. But I also, when I moved to Western Massachusetts in like the late 2000s, I went to the Northeast Organic Farming Association conference, and I taught a class on permaculture of the inner landscape.
Oh, wow.
Straight up. Didn't even know what I was doing. I was just like, I'm going to take the permaculture principles and I'm going to talk about how they relate to our internal landscape. And there were so many people there. And that was so interesting to me because this was a farming conference. And I was just like not expecting all these really kind of like hardcore farmers and permaculture people to just come and really be interested. But actually, It was super interesting for folks.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'm excited. I mean, man, we could have a whole podcast interview on that topic.
Yeah, I actually kind of like brought it in with the principles. Like I was really familiar with the principles, but then I was like, I just kept asking questions for people to like have them bring it out, because it's like we're all discovering what that could look like, right?
Right. So,
a bit of an aside.
I love how the collective consciousness works, you know, totally. And how these things bubble up in different places around the world around the same time. So it's delightful.
Totally. And I'm not surprised that we've been on a very similar path. Okay. So then what you said, things got interesting.
So when I quit farming and consulting and doing all those things, it's actually a little side, whereas I ended up shifting from permaculture, because one of the things was that I was really struggling to make a decent living, and I was struggling to take good care of my health. So I ended up taking those skills and became one of the first licensed medical marijuana growers in Boulder, Colorado, right when the laws started to change. So I've always been like on this edge of culture. I've always loved being on the edge of things. And so I kind of rode that wave, and I utilized the horticulture and the permaculture to bring organic medical marijuana farming to the people that needed support in the medical realms. And that was amazing. And I loved being on the forefront of that, but it still kind of felt like the same thing. Like I still wasn't like fully diving into what I really wanted to do. I felt like, okay, here's what I could do. This is what the world needs, and this is what I'm good at. And then there's this opening, and I love plants, and here's a way to be more sustainable and take better care of myself. So it's like been this funny meandering pathway, but ultimately I quit farming because I was like, okay, I've got to find the alignment within myself. What am I doing? I'm going all around outside. I really need to come dive inside. So I quit farming, which was terrifying because I was making really good money and I was expert in my field and I had a master's in horticulture and I was being invited to teach in universities and I was consulting on big, beautiful projects. And it was like to walk away from the career as it was expanding at that time felt ridiculous. I felt, what am I doing? But I was miserable. I was miserable and I was stressed and I felt like I was on the wrong path somehow. So I quit. And I was about to buy a farm. I was just about to buy some land. And I was like, I can't do it. I have to tend to myself. And so instead of investing in real estate, which is what most people tend to do, instead, I didn't. And I chose to get to the root of my depression and my suicidal ideation and really figure out what was going on. And so that's when I discovered Vipassana meditation and long period, like 10-day silent meditation retreats. I was so scared. I was so scared of sitting in silence for 10 days with my own thoughts. And the first one was pretty brutal, but there was something by day seven, there was something that really dropped in where I felt like I discovered the volume button and the on-off switch for my mind, which I realized I had never had. I was such an intelligent and bright woman. And as a girl, I was very encouraged to utilize my mind because I was like studying with the boys and the calculus and the biochemistry and all these things. I was really encouraged to use my mind, but I was not really encouraged to connect with my body and my heart and to really listen. And so when I first started sitting in silent meditation, I was astounded at the level of rest and sanctuary I felt in my body. And at the same time, also discovered some very powerful entheogens. I was working with ayahuasca and with other really powerful ceremonial plant medicines for quite a long time. But there was still this place I couldn't seem to quite. I was very stubborn. You know, I have a brilliant mind, but I admit I was very, very stubborn to really like drop in. There was a lot of fear coming into this life for me. But when I discovered a very powerful molecule that is derived from the toxin of the toad called the Bufo alvarius toad or the Sonoran desert toad, there is a molecule that is extracted and then it later is derived and synthesized called 5-methoxydimethyltryptamine. It's also referred to as the God molecule. And the God molecule allows a completely embodied practice of sort of the surrender of the ego, the surrender of everything I know to be I, not in trying to kill the ego, because the ego is actually one of our greatest tools and allies, but to create a reset, a realignment with the ego so that the ego takes its right place as our bodyguard, as our protector, as our steward, as our cheerleader, and not as the king and the CEO in every single role. In our society, we've tended to give our ego every single role. We've sort of abdicated our inner landscape. We're out in the world distracted and we're not really paying attention. And so our ego is taking control and it's kept us safe. And I'm so very grateful to that my ego kept me safe and it kept driving me into my heart, into my soul, like wanting to create an alliance with the whispers in my heart. But long periods of meditation and the 5-MeO really finally allowed me to return to a place of complete safety and trust in myself, with my body, and with the universe. As I realized ultimately, I think because of the way I came into the world, I lost trust with the universe. I lost trust with life. I lost trust with God, if whatever that means to you, whatever word that you use to describe the indescribable. Working with this really allowed me to come back into alignment with myself. And I suddenly stopped chewing my cheeks. I never chewed them again after I did my first session. It completely stopped. I was dumbfounded. I wasn't expecting that. It wasn't my intention, but I got to the core, like the true core of why I was doing that. And the feeling of freedom and ease in my system after that was, I realized that that's the natural state of the healthy, whole human being, is the state of feeling connected to all of life and all of creation and to myself. It changed my life completely. I had kind of finally found my way home in my inner landscape and was finally resting within zone zero. And from that place in true stillness and silence, that's when the incredible creativity, the songs, the books, the retreats, like just this overwhelming but beautiful eternal wellspring of love and inspiration started pouring from my heart in this way that I had never experienced before. I'd always been trying so hard. I'd always efforted a lot. Everything really shifted then. And I'm so grateful for that for those moments of giving myself the space and the time to dive deep, to giving myself the space to practice dying, to practice silence. And I feel in a way it's been the best investment of my life. Maybe real estate would have been a better financial investment, but I am finally in a place where I am like, oh, I'm at home here. And to me, that's priceless. And now I can trust that the rest of my life, I will continue to walk this path of alignment with myself. And so I trust that the investment will hopefully pay off in the three-dimensional world too, and allow me to really like walk with greater ease and abundance, which it already has been in the last several years. It was scary to walk away from my well-paying career, but I feel so much more fulfilled and so much more alive and alignment now.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. I think there's so much. I can feel it in you.
Yes.
I can feel the difference. And I feel like that's really meaningful. You know, I know for people listening, they didn't know you before, but it's like to feel that softness, to feel the ease in you, to feel that sense that you have of flow. I guess flow is a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's like radiant flow. It does. It feels like flow, and it's delicious.
Yes, that is so amazing. So yeah, thank you for sharing all of that. I love that this has happened for you. And I am curious. So for you, you said this was like the teeth grinding and the chewing of your cheeks that stopped immediately.
It was immediate. Yeah.
How about other patterns in yourself, like anxiety?
Yeah. So what was fascinating is when I first started practicing with 5-MeO, there was a complete reset. I couldn't find depression and anxiety in my body. And I was sort of shocked because it had always been this sort of underlying theme. And for several weeks and months, I feel like it continued. But eventually I noticed I was slipping back into some of my old habits, my old three-dimensional patterns, my old three-dimensional habits. And I started to notice some of the depression and anxiety coming back. And that's when I really got serious about meditation. Like I had, you know, done some meditation, but once I noticed that shift, I realized it was my responsibility to stabilize. Like I had catalyzed myself. I had given myself this reset, but I couldn't expect plant medicine or an animal medicine in this case to do the work for me. Like it gave me the opportunity to experience myself as healthy and whole once more. But then I had to do the work to shift my patterns and my mental patterns, my thought patterns. And that's where meditation, Vipassana, yoga, breath work, those are the tools that I've really used to stabilize the experience. And I got relief from that animal medicine, but I feel like I've stabilized it through practice and then through aligning myself with my Dharma. I'm a very Dharmic being, and I am happiest and healthiest when I'm in alignment and I'm in service, but not just service from being a martyr, but service that I actually truly enjoy. It's like, I can't tell what's better, giving or receiving, you know, like being of service or just being in that space with people and with myself, so whether it's singing or writing or being in service with one-on-one or in groups or in workshops. It is like this upward spiral. It just keeps getting better and better. And so I have really found that the practices together, I think it can actually be really dangerous to depend and rely on plant medicines to change us. The integration means to make whole. And that's when we really become aligned with the revelations that we can have, the peak experiences that we can have in plant medicine ceremonies. I think when we bring that, we stabilize it in the daily practice, that's when we actually can integrate. And I think integration has become a buzzword, but it's also very real and one of the most important parts of leaning into this type of work. It hasn't just been like, boom, magic, presto, all is well. I still have waves of anxiety and depression that can come through, but I notice that they are bells of awareness. When I have gotten out of alignment with myself, with my dreams, with my vision for my life, the way I want to be of service, if I start to get distracted for too long or start treating my body in ways that I know it doesn't enjoy, then that's when those thoughts and feelings start to emerge again. And instead of spiraling down and being consumed by them like I used to, I now recognize them as a bell of awareness to come back into my practices, to come back into my vision for my life, my devotion of why am I here? Like, I'm going to die. Like, I might have a day left. I might have 50 years left, but how am I going to use this precious time I have in my life? And that's why I think death practice is one of the most important tools for a healthy life, because when we try to pretend like it's not coming and we just are la 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 with our hands and our fingers and our ears not looking, and we're afraid of the grim reaper that we think is right behind our shoulder, we're always sort of running from it. And I finally just stopped and turned and faced that fear and faced death and faced that grim reaper and realized that what I really want to be doing with my life is singing and writing and sharing my path to relieving my own suffering in hopes that it can help others relieve their suffering. And if I'm not doing that for too long, then I start to get anxious and depressed again. And so now it's a beautiful indicator of the path, helping me stay on my path that feels good for me.
I love that. I think it is so important. And I think really easy for people to fall into a dependence energy with entheogens in their life or other practices, whatever it is that's creating peak experiences. It could be skydiving. Like, it depends on the person, right? What they're doing. But for some people, it is that actually that can be quite addictive. It's like, there's a lot of different ways that people.
You're facing death when you jump out of a plane. You're bringing that is another way,
It is exactly another way. I remember somebody in college who had an addiction to skydive. He would skydive every weekend. And I'm just
life becomes boring if you're not facing death in every moment, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. That's another piece too. Right. Mm-hmm. To like feel dependent on peak experiences as like, oh, this is what I have to feel all the time.
Right.
And to really come into this place of like the mundane is magic relationship with life is just as potent when we allow ourselves to connect more deeply and to actually like integrate some of this into our life. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I feel that so much. So thank you for all of your words and your experience and just sharing and like sharing even just your story, you know, the possibility of this for others too. You know, when we hear stories are powerful. Sometimes is a key that can unlock a door for somebody. So Yeah, thank
right?
you.
Yeah, stories really kind of point to, like, they point to an archetypal truth or like a universal truth, right? So we can use stories to tell lies and to distract and entertain. And we can also use stories to reveal the universal currents and to help us feel more connected by helping us tap in and feel our emotions more. So I definitely would consider myself a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to share my story.
Mm. Yeah, it's an honor to receive your story. And I know that, like you were saying, like a large part of what helps you to feel in flow and in connection is actually offering this sort of thing outwardly to others. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk a little about some of the retreats and spaces that you offer?
Yeah, I would love to do that. There's one thing I don't want to forget. There's one really simple thing, but may I share that first before we
Please.
Go there? Because I don't want to lose the thread.
Please, yes.
So when we talk about anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation, and I listed all sorts of different tools that I utilize, like yoga and breath work and meditation and silence and nature and plant medicines. The funniest thing is I think, though, the most important ones have been things like fresh water and getting enough sleep and being careful with the amount of media I intake, especially at night, and, you know, healthy foods that my body is nourished by that aren't inflaming my system. So non-inflammatory diets. And the most important piece I feel that has really helped my anxiety and depression is breaking my addiction to processed sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Processed sugar, I have noticed the more sensitive I've become, the more I sit in meditation and feel myself. There have been some times where I did intake some sugar while sitting and I felt the spike and the crash. And I noticed that when I eat a lot of sugar, I tend to get more anxious, depressed. I get these spikes and crashes. My body doesn't feel good and healthy. I get cloudy and foggy, and I struggle to be the creative channel that I know that I am. And so what's been fascinating is like there's all these, you know, really, you know, exciting ways of finding alignment with ourselves. But I have found that one of the most important is just that, is like drinking lots of good water, like healthy spring water that's not full of chemicals, and cutting out processed sugar has really been one of the biggest, and tying it back in, one of the biggest tools and helpers for my womb. I feel mm-hmm. like since I have broken my addiction, I went 8 years with absolutely no processed sugar of any kind and out of desperation. And now I tried to bring it back in a little bit. And I've noticed that when I do, it's at first I might not notice, but it very quickly reminds me that I'm in my greatest ease and safety. And like my nervous system is most regulated when I don't consume it. And it's shocking how it's in everything. I mean, you can't even buy a salad dressing or even like a veggie burger almost these days without seeing sugar added. It's like innocuously, like children are made to be addicted to it from early childhood. Every reward and every holiday is laced with sugar. And so it's so funny that there's so many drugs and so many substances out there that are illegal. Like even like the, you know, some of the ones that I utilize for consciousness shifting, but yet one of the most dangerous ones like sugar are not only legal, but they are ridiculously pushed upon our population.
Yeah, that is so true. And I feel like this is a topic that could be an entire other episode.
Right? It
really could be. True. And I really appreciate you bringing this forward too. And I think as well, like you're speaking so much of my language when we bring it back to those like fundamental pieces of nutrition.
Yeah.
Intake of media, like intake of anything. What is it? Is it your food? Is it your water?
Right.
Is it the media? Is it time in nature? You know, like what are you giving yourself? How are you nourishing yourself?
Yeah.
Is fundamental in
it's
how
fundamental. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like I learned the most from meditation, like from sitting in silence for 10 and even up to 30 days at a time. The refinement in my system showed me that it was the simple things that actually were creating such a huge impact on my body that I was unaware. I was so desensitized to the impact that I wasn't aware until I slowed down enough to notice.
Mm, yeah, that makes so much sense. It's interesting. I'm trading right now with someone who's a somatic experiencing practitioner.
Mm.
And it's super interesting because in her story, she's been sharing about her own, or she has shared a bit about her own experience and just how the subtle awarenesses have completely changed her life, like becoming more subtly aware of the different places where she might be holding something and then navigating that and realizing, oh, she has all these health issues that are like all these different multi-layered things that when it comes down to it, it is in some ways just by becoming more subtly aware of a fundamental piece. It's like that can change everything. It's like pretty incredible. So, so cool.
Yeah. So thanks for letting me add that. Cause I noticed we were like, you know, on all these, you know, beautiful spiritual esoteric concepts. And I'm like, you know, but like, I got to bring it down to this. I can't, you know, not speak to one of the most important tools for me.
And I think for myself, like I see in myself, I know in myself, if I do not get outside, get fresh air and walk, like I just need to walk every day at least 15 minutes. I mean, sometimes it's great if I do longer than that, but at least 15 minutes outside in fresh air, ideally in nature in some way, like out in the forest or, you know, even on a dirt road, but just like having some experience of being outside connection. That is like, it's truly like I am not the same person if I don't get that.
The best medicine, right?
It really is. How did we get to a place where so many of us are just sitting here looking at screens on devices
all the day long,
inside, completely disconnected? Anyway, let's talk about your retreats. Right. I'm excited to hear.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there's many different ways to connect with me. One is I do offer 10-day silent meditation and medicine retreats. I offer one in Mexico. There's actually one coming up at the end of May. And then there's also one in the countryside of France in September. And so there's two opportunities each year to go really deep. Like if this has inspired you, you're not like, oh yeah, I want to do this. Then 10 days is really, I feel like the time it takes to truly learn how to do this somatic, this body scan meditation properly. It takes a while to slow down and to drop in. And so if you can give yourself the opportunity to go to a 10-day retreat, any of them are great, but I do offer one that is combining silent meditation with other modalities, which is rather non-traditional. And so sometimes I ask myself, who am I to have the audacity to change tradition? And instead of doing 10 days of silence where we don't move our bodies and we be as austere as possible, who am I to change that? And I do have the audacity because this is the path that has worked for me. And I've noticed that I so respect the traditional teachers who are teaching this, and especially respect Goenka, who popularized his style of Vipassana. Vipassana meditation is actually dated all the way back to the style of meditation that Buddha used thousands of years ago under the Bodhi tree. So I feel like so often in our culture, we are not trained to sit and not move our bodies for 10 days. And so many people won't go. They won't go because of the austerity of it. And at the same time, I feel like we can really do profound and deep work when we give ourselves 5 to 6 hours of daily meditation. And we also break it up with daily yoga and breath work and sound baths, time in nature, swimming in the sea, even an ecstatic dance where we're still in noble silence. We are honoring ourselves. We're staying in silence. We're not making gestures. We're not making eye contact. We're totally going inside. We're also bringing in the ecstatic element of being alive. And so it's an edgy practice, but I feel like it's the culmination of all the tools that I used to come to this place in my life. And it's the retreat I've always wanted to go to. And so we also offer optional plant medicines to augment the experience if you feel called. It's not necessary, but some people want the opportunity to be able to dive in deeper. Sometimes it's even the subtle medicines like lotus and mint and ginger and sananga. We forget that some of these plants are medicines. And so there's a whole range of possibilities if you want to go deeper into sensation and practice death, then there's opportunity for that as well. And so those retreats are called Entheogem, and that's Entheogem. So like the word entheogen, which is more commonly understood, and Entheogem refers to the precious gem that is hidden deep within us in that last place that we'll look, right? Which is deep, deep inside of our own clear awareness. And when we find this gem, and we polish it, we recognize that it's more priceless than the most expensive grand diamond you could ever imagine happening on planet Earth. And what's even better about this diamond that's within us is that under the light of our pure awareness, it melts. And when it melts, that is that liquid love. That is Amrita. Like, this is that nourishing nectar of being connected to ourself. And it is an eternal wellspring. And I feel like the combination of modalities that we're offering in Entheogen retreats allows us to tap into that precious gem and to help to melt it so that we can partake of our own nourishing nectar and become the medicine that we are. And so that's if you really want to like dive all the way in. I offer 10-day retreats. I offer some smaller, shorter 3-day retreats. And then there's also other ways. I have a few books out. I have a children's book. I have an incredible sci-fi story called The Songs of Remembering that's recently been released, and also have music available. And there's also online courses and other things that are soon to be released. So there's ways that many of us can't take the time to do a 10-day retreat, but we still want to have a taste of this. And so I've got all sorts of different things coming out for householders who can't get away and who just want a little taste. And then for those who are able and willing to take that time to go all the way into the 10-day retreat. So there's many different ways to get in touch with me, Allison_Avalon on Instagram, just getting started on social media. I've been working more in the one-to-one and in the three-dimensional and five-dimensional realm with people. And so I'm just emerging on the social media realms. And one of the most exciting things that I'm excited to share, and that I look forward to having you, Kaya, on a podcast that I'll be launching soon called You Are the Medicine. And it's a platform that we can talk about this essence that, in a sense, it is us. It's within us. The best medicine is within us. And then also being able to dive in with people who have found their medicine, whether it be through womb wisdom work, or whether it be artists or musicians, or whether it be plant medicine guides and people who are utilizing plant medicines as a way in as well. So I'm really looking forward to having this platform to dive deeper to help everyone realize that you are the medicine. And when you connect with yourself in whatever way feels right to you, whether it's through breathwork, yoga, meditation, plant medicine, nature, water, whether it's working with me or whether it's not, you are the medicine. And so it's a place to remind you and to remind each of us to really tap into the medicine that's within us.
That is going to be such a good podcast. That was also like a trailer, like a podcast trailer.
Right. I have to write that down, right?
Yeah, seriously. You have the recording now. It'll be up. But for real, I am so excited for you to offer that. Also, I'll just speak into the space that you are connected to a lot of creative and powerful and really like edge walking humans. And so I can only imagine that the types of guests that you're going to have on there are going to be pretty inspiring. So
yeah. Super inspiring. And you've been such an inspiration to me. Like you've really shown up and really brought such beautiful devotion and dedication to your podcast. And I'm so excited for you and just the beautiful community that you're building and the inspiration that you've been for me to finally do it. I've had people telling me for years I should create one, and I've been resistant, and I'm finally going to take my own medicine and stop being resistant and to share my voice. So thank you for being an ally.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm totally here to be in support too. So you are a heart sister of mine for real. So
yes.
Yes. Yes. So thank you so much for all of this, Allison. Like, everything that you're offering to the world it's precious. Like you are saying, it is a gem. Like, you are a gem and it is a gem and what you're offering. And I love it. I love that this is the path that you're walking now. I believe in your work, just like I trust you and I believe in your work, and I'm glad that you're offering it to the world and it can expand now, like outward. Mm. Do you want to just speak to, I know that you're going to be in, because people are all over the world.
Right.
But you are a bit of a nomadic person right now, right?
I am a nomad. Yes. I am a nomad.
Yeah. Are you, you're going to be based a little bit in Northern California this summer or?
Yeah. So there's opportunities to connect with me. I'm going to be performing at the Gratitude Festival in Asheville in June. I'm going to be performing at the Medicina Campout in Oregon in August. I'll be in Mexico in May, and I'll be in Nevada City, California this summer, and back in France in the fall. So I am a full-time nomad, traveling with my beloved and sharing my medicine far and wide. That's how I'm being called. Yeah. If you want to stay in touch, please follow me on Instagram, or please join my email list by going to my website, alisonavalon.com, to stay tuned with the offerings that I'll be sharing around the world. And so when I come to your neighborhood, and if you want me to come to your neighborhood, I love responding to powerful invitations, because I'm a nomad. I have that freedom. I'm able to create a beautiful pathway. And sometimes there's stepping stones and you might be right along my path. And so I love being able to pollinate new communities and to keep weaving this incredible web that we are of these medicine holders, medicine makers, these beings who are activated in our hearts and our souls. We are such a powerful tribe. So yeah, I'm really excited to encounter you along the way, and yeah, stay in touch, please.
Yay. Yes. I will put all of your links on the show notes page for sure, so that everybody has access to them. And just thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You made it, my beautiful friend, to the end of the interview. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for returning. If you left to just listen to the rest of the episode, it is always an honor to connect with you after the interview, because I know not everyone listens all the way to the end. So if you're here, I just want to thank you. And I want to say, wow, right? Wow. Alison has so much wisdom, so much embodied wisdom, and she has such interesting practices that she weaves together. And I think one of the things that I really took away from it was not just the 5-MeO-DMT and that really profound and powerful death practice that she has a lot of experience with and clearly has been immensely healing for her in her life, but also how she's really integrative in her approach, and how everything that she shared could be, in my mind, combined with, like we were talking about, those foundations of health, the clean air, the nature connection, the clean water, like really caretaking your body, paying attention to what inputs are coming into your life, and then also adding in the herbs, adding in the support of both physical herbs that could be in tinctures, that could be in teas, right? That could be in your food. That could also be in the form of flower essences or aromatherapy. Like, there's so many ways that you can weave all of the parts together depending on what affinities you have. But I just really love that she has considered and brought together so much of her lifetime of experience to now offer to the world, but also in order to see that a lot of the time healing comes from integration. Healing comes, and not just integration like after a peak experience like being on an entheogen or psychedelic, but actually integration of various modalities. That a lot of the times it's not just one thing that is what we need on our healing path. And that's how I feel about herbs. I know that sometimes surprises people, that I'm like, oh, herbs are not the answer. Because herbs can be incredible allies for us. But it's just in my own personal experience of my life and in my healing journeys that I've been on, I can never say that herbs were the only thing that I needed. I love integrating. Like, I started as a massage therapist and a body worker. Well, that was after I did my permaculture training and my yoga training, but really integrating all of those pieces, a spiritual path for me has been really important. Connection to nature has been really important. And then, of course, bringing the herbs in, and then, of course, bringing in the fundamental nutrition in. And I am still on my healing path. Like, healing is a lifelong journey, I think, for all of us. Maybe it's even multiple lifetimes. So all of this to say that I just really appreciated that she spoke to this real integrative approach to caretaking, to releasing her anxiety, to releasing the tension in her body. And there can be moments, there can be certain allies. And for her, 5-MeO-DMT has been one of those allies that has really released, really allowed her to just maybe even shed some of those ancestral patterns that were really stuck in her body. So that's pretty cool to hear about. And likely it's going to be many things that will be supportive and helpful for you over time. Just like me, just like Alison. So if you would like to get any of her links, if you're interested in her retreats, if you're interested in finding out where she's going to be, if you want to read her books, any of the things that she mentioned, you can find all of those on the show notes page at herbalwomb.com/episode122, herbalwomb.com/episode122. And if you loved this episode, if there was something in this that you were like, wow, that's really special, that's profound, like I would love to share that with someone. Maybe there's someone you know that would really benefit from hearing this, then please share it with them. And you can do that individually in a DM or a text message, or you can do that publicly on social media. And if you do it publicly on social media, please tag me at Herbal Womb Wisdom on Instagram, especially. That would be nice. And yeah, I think that's all for today. I feel like this is a particularly long episode in a really good way. I hope that you received a lot from the conversation we had. It was such a pleasure and an honor to have Allison on. She's just a really dear heart and dear sister and dear friend of mine. So I love when we can weave together the family and really share our gifts with the world together. Okay, so until next week, live well.